You keep hitting the same walls with your team, your workload, your life.
You know what they say about insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting different results?
Are you ready to break the cycle? Engineer your success. Insiders is Dr. James Bryant's private podcast. It's like having a coach in your corner focused on helping you win at work and home.
One story, one insight, one action to help you focus on what matters most.
Join at engineeryoursuccessnow.com/insiders.
So my father-in-law pulls me aside one day and he says, so, you know, what's the plan here? Like, are you going to keep doing a little bit of photography on the side, a little bit of web design on the side? You spent a lot of time going to school to become an engineer. Are you sure you want to just throw that all away? And he suggested that perhaps there was a way to do engineering. I just had to change how I did it, and maybe I could find joy in it again. And I thought maybe I should give that a shot.
Success isn't just about what you achieve. It's about living a life that reflects your values and priorities. Welcome to Engineer Your Success, the podcast that helps you lead with intention and live fulfilled.
I want to welcome you to the Engineer Your Success podcast. I'm the host, Dr. James Bryant. Joining me today is Mr. Aaron Monker, an accomplished engineer, entrepreneur, and leader with nearly two decades of experience in product development and leadership. He's the founder of Pipeline Design and Engineering, a trusted partner for some of the world's largest medical device companies, developing advanced automation and manufacturing solutions. But Aaron's impact goes far beyond engineering excellence. He's a champion for building joyful, positive workplace cultures and believes that when people enjoy their work, creativity and productivity follow. He's also the host of the Being an Engineer podcast, connecting engineers with industry knowledge, best practices, and inspiring stories. Aaron, you have built an impressive career as an engineer and an entrepreneur. What first sparked your interest in engineering?
Thank you, James. What a delight to be here with you today. What sparked my interest in engineering? When I was a kid, I remember, first of all, you know, the Legos. I loved playing with Legos. I loved building forts. I would work on my bike. So I was always kind of mechanically inclined. Just it was in my DNA. I remember this one time I was probably 10 years old, maybe something like that. And I had this little crummy FM radio, probably like a $10 hunk of junk. And I thought, what does it look like under this plastic shell? And so I took it apart and, you know, there are transistors and resistors and power in there. And I had no idea what was going on, right? I was 10. And even to this day, I'm awful with electronics. So I probably still wouldn't know what's going on in there. But especially at 10 years old, I had no idea what was going on. And I just started tinkering. I started fiddling with it. I had a pair of headphones with the 3.5 millimeter male jack. And I just started putting it in different places on the PCB inside this FM radio. I don't even know what I expected to happen necessarily, but I was just like touching it around in different places. And all of a sudden I put it on this place that to me, there was no indication that touching the 3.5 millimeter jack on this location would have produced sound through the earphones. It did. It wasn't the typical, you know, the female receptacle where that 3.5 millimeter jack is supposed to go. It was somewhere completely different on the board. I touched the jack to components on this board and sound started coming through the headphones. I thought that was the most amazing thing in the world. Like to this day, I don't fully understand why I thought it was so amazing, but I did. And experiences like that eventually led me to the career of engineering. And in fact, I was not a very thoughtful youth as far as my future. I didn't know what engineering was or that I wanted to be an engineer. I knew I was mechanically inclined. I liked working with my hands. I liked designing things. I was reasonably good at math and science, et cetera, et cetera. And I was sitting at the dinner table with my family as a senior in high school. And my dad says to me, so what are you going to study in college? Like, what's the plan here? And back in those days, my entire focus in life was surfing and hanging out with friends. I grew up in Hawaii and there were, you know, beautiful waves and beaches and the weather was perfect every day. And so I wanted to be surfing and hanging out with friends. I didn't give any consideration to my future. My dad asks, I say, I don't know. I haven't thought about it. He suggests engineering. I thought, okay, sounds good. And that was about all the thought I gave to it. So really not fully understanding what an engineer was, but having incredible faith in my father, I said, great, I'll try engineering. I enrolled and it turned out to be a great fit.
No, that's a great story. You're not the only engineer I've talked to that didn't really have a clue. They were good at science and math. They liked solving problems. Someone made a suggestion that's like, okay, I think I'll do that.
Yeah.
And you get into it and you love it. At least that's how it was for me.
I was lucky, honestly. I've always been lazy. And so my dad says, what are you going to do? I don't know. That requires effort to think about, you know? He says, engineering. Great. That's easy. I don't have to think now. I'll just do that.
Have you always been lazy or just really efficient with how you use your energy and time?
See, I love how you find the nuances in these things, James. Yes, I am lazy, but it's in service of productivity and efficiency. I love being very efficient. And so, yeah, kind of tongue in cheek, I say that I'm lazy, but I also work very hard. So I don't know how to reconcile those two things.
Yeah, I know that much about you, which is why I chimed in with another slightly different way to reframe that laziness. Because I think you do things in service of productivity. How can you become more efficient? When you went to university, it was for mechanical engineering. Is that what you chose?
Originally, it was manufacturing engineering. I had a two-year hiatus. And when I came back, they had canceled the manufacturing program. And the next option was mechanical engineering. So I said, okay, I'll do mechanical engineering. I'm glad I did. Mechanical engineering was a better fit for me.
Tell us a little bit about your early career. So you finished university, you have your degree in mechanical engineering. What was next?
I loved CAD. In school, I would go to the CAD lab. Most computers didn't run CADs well on their own, but I would spend weekends there. I thought it was so fun. I remember modeling a Ferrari. One of my classes was we had to pick something challenging and model it. And I found a Ferrari dealership and they let me come in and take pictures of one of their vehicles. And so I got, you know, pictures from all different angles. And then I used those as a background to get the profile correct. I modeled a Ferrari. And it was so rewarding, so fun. There was this rendering program, super clunky, really hard to use. But I got this CAD model of the Ferrari into this rendering program. And I had, like, you know, a little bit of water on the ground and some rocks in the background. And I rendered it back then. It was nowhere near as good as photorealistic renderings are these days. But it looked better than just the CAD model. I was so excited about that. So I knew I wanted to do some kind of engineering that had a strong focus on design. And so my first job, it was an intern at a local company while I was still going to school, and we designed professional drywall tools. And so there was a mud gun, and I can't even remember other tools, but it was awesome. We didn't know what we were doing as designers for drywall tools. There was a small team pulled together, and our charter was to develop these new tools and brand them differently, you know, make some improvements where we could. And so to do that, because none of us had any background in drywalling, we bought competitors' tools and tore them apart. And some of them just straight up reverse engineered, and others we, you know, take some basic measurements, but then we'd make some changes here and there. And I had a blast. It was fun running CAD, using Pro Engineer and modeling these parts and then sending them off to the machine shop. And, you know, I had no business sending parts off to a machine shop. I was this rookie intern engineer, had never designed commercial parts before. Here I am sending POs to vendors for $20,000, $30,000 to make the parts. This is 20 years ago. I made some mistakes. But it was a blast. I graduated. I moved to Arizona. I had another internship doing fixture design for a biomechanical testing lab. I ran a mill and a lathe and built fixtures for testing a variety of different biomechanical components. And that was also fantastic. I switched to SolidWorks. Then I got my first full-time job doing medical device design. I worked on the design of a GERD device, G-E-R-D, gastroesophageal reflux disease. And it was this device that would go down the esophagus and effectively reduce the functional volume of the stomach from, I think it was something like 2,000 cc's to like 30 cc's. You start eating, your belly gets full quickly, and you stop eating. I did that for three and a half years. And that brings us to about 2008, when the recession hit, the Great Recession, right? The housing market collapsed, and I got laid off. I thought I didn't like engineering anymore. Towards the end of this company, I wasn't very engaged. And that was one of the reasons that I was one of the people who was let go. The owners of this company, they were smart people. They could tell that, hey, Aaron's not like fully engaged here. We need to let some people go. It just makes sense. Let him go. So I thought that I didn't like engineering anymore. And I started exploring completely different options, like commercial real estate, and started a photography company with a friend. I started a small web design company by myself, designing websites. It was okay, but wasn't bringing in enough money. I had gotten married. We had our first child, a house, a mortgage. So my father-in-law pulls me aside one day and he says, so, you know, what's the plan here? Like, are you going to keep doing a little bit of photography on the side, a little bit of web design on the side? You spent a lot of time going to school to become an engineer, a marketable skill. Are you sure you want to just throw that all away? And he suggested that perhaps there was a way to do engineering. I just had to change how I did it, and maybe I could find joy in it again. And I thought that's clever, wise advice, and maybe I should give that a shot. So I did. And the way I changed engineering was I didn't go back and just get a full-time job. I started on my own. I got a few little jobs in the beginning, and you know, I got paid peanuts. Like, I think it was $30 an hour, $35 an hour, something like that. I loved it. It was funny because towards the end of the time working at this last company, I didn't love it. I'd walk around with earbuds in my ears all day, isolating myself. My heart wasn't in it. When I started Pipeline, my company, which I'm still running, I was working way more than I ever, putting in 60, 70 hour weeks regularly. And I found that I just loved it. It was so fun. It was so fulfilling for me. You know, I had an epiphany a while back when I was running Pipeline. Things were feeling stale for me, and I wasn't finding fulfillment in the work that I was doing. And I had this amazing epiphany about why that was and how to fix it. Are you ready? If you find yourself in a situation where your heart isn't in it, you're not happy, you're not finding fulfillment, this is what to do. Here it comes. Make a change.
Easier said than done.
Stupidly simple, right? But make a change. That was my epiphany. If you're not happy, there's a reason. Be self-aware and make a change.
Have the courage to change.
Yes.
Sometimes when we don't know what's next, we lack the courage and conviction to make the change. But when you do make the change, it can make all the difference for you, your family, your friends, for everyone around you. Because when your energy is being sucked by work, everybody can tell,
Yeah. It doesn't need to be a massive change. I'm not saying you have to switch careers or jobs like me in the beginning, where I wasn't happy working as an employee at this job, but then I kept doing engineering. Like, the work didn't change much, but my autonomy over it, my, I don't know, governance of the work, that's what changed, and it made all the difference.
What was it about the previous job that zapped your joy and energy? It
took me a long time to realize what was going on, but eventually I realized that I thrive when I have high-level authority over, you know, whatever the effort is. And I didn't really have that at when I was an employee. I was a young engineer, so naturally I had a manager who would check in and make sure I was doing what I was supposed to do. And I remember this one time, I started the photography company on the side while I was still working this company, which for the most part was fine. Every now and then I'd take a 5-minute break, look at photography websites, read through a forum or whatever. I was doing that one day, and my boss sees me scrolling through this website, and he brought it up later. He said, hey, you really need to be doing that on your own time, not in company time. Perfectly reasonable, right? Of course, when I'm at work, I need to be doing work. That's what I'm paid to do. I did not take it well. How dare you? I'm an adult. How dare you tell me that I can't take 5 minutes, you know, and like look at a few photography pictures. It's a good mental break, clear my head, and then I'll get back to work. That was really effective doing the engineering work, especially in the beginning. In the first several years, I was really effective. So I thought, how dare you tell me I can't take 5 minutes? I've learned I don't thrive in environments where I'm being told what to do. We all have to take instructions at some point. But when I have that high level autonomy to do things that bring me joy and fill my bucket, I thrive.
Yeah, I suspect it's a combination of the things themselves and the method you execute and bring those things to fruition. Sometimes managers think they know exactly what you should do and exactly how you should do it. And that level of prescription is going to be pretty disastrous for how you've described yourself for a person that operates with high autonomy on those kinds of skills.
I didn't know that about myself at the time. There was another manager at this company. I got transferred to him, and this manager gave me so much autonomy. He said, here's the problem, go solve it. And I did a great job for him. And they were so befuddled internally. They did not understand, well, hold on, like he was not doing so great. And all of a sudden we transferred him to this other engineer, the other manager, and he's just crushing it now. They didn't know what to make of that, right? It was a long time until I knew what to make of it, but I eventually understood myself.
Everyone expects you to have all the answers, but who's asking you how you're doing? Who's helping you think through your challenges? Engineer Your Success Insiders is my private podcast designed specifically for you. It's like having a coach in your corner focused on helping you win at work and at home. One story, one insight, one action that you can take, all wrapped up into real coaching insights that you can use. Join at engineeryoursuccessnow.com/insiders. No, I think that's a great story, and thank you for indulging me backtracking why it was draining your energy, because there are people that are going to be listening to this episode and they might feel their energy being drained by what they're doing. And so if you find yourself in that situation, investigate, why do you feel that way? You know, what's the issue? Are there certain things that come up in your everyday work where you feel like it's more energy draining than others? To me, the greatest level of awareness is self-awareness. Mm. When you're able to be self-aware of yourself and your environment and the interaction that you have with that environment. Let's talk about pipeline design and engineering. You started in 2009. It was just you. Tell us about the company now and your take on company culture.
Well, first of all, here at Pipeline, we don't do pipelines. And that's been the running joke for a long time. The company name came from my upbringing surfing in Hawaii. On the north shore of Oahu, there's a famous world-class surf break called Bonsai Pipeline. Most people just call it Pipeline. Ironically, I never surfed there growing up. The waves were too big, too gnarly, but it was the pinnacle of surfing. I was very aware of it. We'd go watch frequently. When I started Pipeline, I thought, I want Pipeline to be the pinnacle, the world-class, you know, engineering company. I named it after the surf spot in Hawaii. In the beginning, we developed, mostly it was general product design, product development. So it might have been an iPhone case. It might have been a medical device, might have been a piece of solar power equipment, but it was pretty general. And over time, we started kind of just organically finding these customers who needed help with fixtures, test fixtures.
Okay.
And so we designed test fixtures for them, grew organically to the point where most of our work ended up being in that area as opposed to like, you know, consumer product design. We're building machines, and then we started adding motion to those machines, and then it was full automation. And so these days, probably 90% of our work is developing new manufacturing processes, automated machines, and custom fixtures. You asked about culture, which I appreciate because that's something near and dear to my heart. Early on, I attended a business coaching group called Entrepreneurs Organization, EO. They talked a lot about your whys for doing this and what are your core values and the purpose behind your company. Early on, I decided the purpose for Pipeline is to bring joy to the lives of our team members. If we're not bringing joy, why are we here? I've built our culture around that idea. Formally, the purpose is promoting joy in the lives of our team members. Made a huge difference. Thank you.
How does that translate for you guys?
Yeah, right. Because it can't just be this, you know, nice sounding platitude that you hang on a wall. Right? It has to translate into profitability. If you're not profitable, you cease to be a business and you can no longer promote joy in the lives of your team members or your customers for that matter. So it does have to translate into commercial value, and it 100% does. I've said this multiple times. I'm 100% convinced the only reason Pipeline still exists, the reason we've not gone out of business, the reason we've succeeded is because of our culture. People who work here, they actually like working here. They like working with each other. They are not micromanaged. They are empowered. They feel trusted. They feel valued and respected. And we have a great time working together. You know, you come to work and a lot of people just, it's drudgery. They don't want to go to work, right? It's like, oh, I have to go to work. Sure, some days are like that, even in a wonderful culture and wonderful company. But for the most part, we just have a good time working here. We're a small team. It's some larger organizations where bureaucracy rules. It might take you 2 weeks to order a screw. 2 weeks to get a screw. Here at Pipeline, we have project budgets, but there are very few approvals. If an engineer needs to order something for a project, he or she knows that he's trusted to do the right thing, and he just goes and buys the thing that needs to be purchased. And honestly, we haven't had problems. It's a low bureaucracy environment. Our core value number two at Pipeline is governed by productivity, not bureaucracy. And here's another very concrete example of how this culture has translated into revenue. We get slow on occasion. Our business is selling time. We're doing custom projects. We don't have a product off the shelf. Sometimes there's a lull and we get slow. Years ago, a customer called us up and said, hey, we've got this pretty big project, but it needs to be done really fast. The timeline was 10 weeks. And there were two machines that needed to be built. One of them was a ground up, starting with a blank piece of paper machine build. And the other, a significant upgrade to an existing machine that we had delivered them. And I knew that there was no way we could do this in their timeline, 10 weeks, unless we were putting in a whole bunch of overtime. I approached the team and I said, hey guys, here's what's going on. We've been a little slow lately. We've got this great opportunity, perfect project for us right in our wheelhouse, but it's going to require overtime. Nights, there's no way around it if we want to accept this job. And instead of saying, all right, guys, we're doing this, so tell your families, sorry, you're not going to see them for a little while. I said, you tell me, are you guys willing to sign up for this? I'm not going to force anyone, but if we all agree and tell the customer, yes, I want everyone to understand what that means for you. You're going to have to work, you know, overtime. So you tell me, is the team willing to take this on? I think I've generated enough trust with the team that they believed me. They believed that if they said no, we would have turned down the work. To everyone's credit, the answer was a resounding yes. We are willing to sign up for the nights, the weekends, the overtime. We took the project and not once did anyone have to step in and say, you promised and now you're not working hard enough. Everyone did what needed to be done. People stayed late, came in on the weekends, and we got it done in 10 weeks. Two good-sized projects, which is unheard of. Typically for a project that size, it's probably more like 5 or 6 months. But we were able to pull together and focus everyone on these two projects and knocked them out. The only reason we did that is because people trust each other, like working together, and we're willing to sign up for a hard project.
So there may be someone listening, an entrepreneur, business owner, who, you know, they're like, that sounds great. We have our mission statement and our core values, but what are some practical steps you've taken to cultivate that kind of culture
We have designed our routines and our processes around supporting the core values and mission, the purpose of Pipeline. So a few things that we do, I think that regular interactions are critical. If you don't have regular interactions between the whole team, it just doesn't work. And people trust each other based on relationships. And if there's no trust, the quality of the work isn't there. We have daily meetings. The type of meeting does vary day to day. There are three different kinds of meetings that we have, but they're all pretty short, anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes per day. It's a time the whole team comes together. And sometimes it's in person. There always is a core group of people who are in person at the office. And there are people who join remotely as well. And I think in person is best for building relationships, but Zoom meetings are pretty good these days as well. So there's an opportunity for everyone to be together and see each other's faces, talk and make jokes. We're developing connections and building relationships, and it's a planned part of each day. We have four core values, and we encourage the team to nominate their fellow team members for living these core values. And there's a small cash prize at the end of the month for whoever wins. And so we encourage core value nominations. And at the end of the month, during one of those meetings that I mentioned, we will read all of the nominations given. Each team member that has been nominated is recognized for whatever he or she did. And it's really a kind of uplifting time, right? It takes 5 minutes to read through these, but it always warms my heart because you hear team members saying kind, positive, supportive things about other team members. And then there's a little prize at the end for whoever wins. But that's been another way that we have fostered the culture that we have.
Okay. No, I think that's great. And a lot of good nuggets that people can take in use and integrate into their own organizations. Another thing that you do, you also host a podcast, right? Called Being an Engineer. What inspired you to start the podcast?
Well, years ago, I heard about this guy, Dr. James Bryant, and I was like, wouldn't it be cool if I could have him on a podcast that I owned? So for 5 years, I prepared and finally, Dr. James Bryant was a guest, and I fulfilled my dreams. I'll probably shut it down at this point.
You are too kind. That's funny.
The podcast started during the pandemic, and this coaching group I was a part of, I mentioned, our mentor, our coach in this group, he posed the question to our group. He said, what if COVID decimates your business and you have to close shop? And I thought, what are you going to do next? I thought, that's an interesting question. And so I thought through different things. And eventually I thought podcast might be kind of fun. I think I would enjoy that. Very quickly realized I did not need to wait until my business folded to start a podcast. So I started that. Over the years, I developed this belief that engineers are the superheroes of our world. Think about all the experiences facilitated by engineers, whether it's a road to do a road trip, travel cross country and visit family, whatever, or the phones that allow us to stay connected with one another, a fan that keeps us cool. All of these were developed by engineers. I think engineers are the superheroes of this world. I want to help engineers do their jobs faster and better. I've always been impatient. My mom would tell me growing up, why are you so impatient? You need to learn to be patient. Patience is a virtue. And while there is some truth to that, I think there's also value in being impatient. I want to help engineers work better, faster. We're constantly reinventing the wheel. Chances are, if I'm an engineer designing some widget, that widget has probably been designed either the same thing or very, very similar somewhere else by someone else, but we don't have access to that knowledge. It's locked away in some other company's vault. The Being an Engineer podcast is a tool to disseminate engineering knowledge to the entire community. We have high-performing engineers such as yourself and others on the show to talk about what they do at work, how they win, how they succeed. They share some insights, they share some pro tips, and now everyone who's listening can be a part of that, learn from it, benefit from it.
It was a pleasure being a guest on your show. I really thank you and appreciate the honor. What are some of the most insightful lessons you've learned from your guests so far?
You know, the one that comes up over and over and over, because I'll ask similar questions of many of the guests, one of which being, what's the most important tool for an engineer to learn to be successful at work? Early on, I expected answers like CAD, simulation, or DFM. Those are important, but the answer that kept coming up is communication. Work happens through people. So to the degree, to the extent that you can work effectively with other people, that's how effective your work will be. That's how successful you'll be as an engineer. Learn to get along with people. Learn to communicate.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. And I would echo that as well. We typically define that as a soft skill, but it's pretty hard to make sure that you master and that you're continuously communicating.
I have another epiphany for you. So people listening might say, okay, great, communication, but how? How do I actually get better at communicating? Here's a powerful, the other epiphany. Are you ready for it? Here comes the answer.
Yes.
Practice.
Yep.
We practice.
Start practicing.
Just practice. I had an engineer, young engineer, ask me years ago, how do I get better at being an engineer faster? And he was referring to the technical aspect. At the time, I didn't have a great answer to just get a mentor. Over the years, I've learned that the answer is practice. You do more of it. If you're motivated to accelerate your progress, you just do more. Instead of working 40 hours a week, put in 45 or 50 hours and you'll get better. There are trade-offs. You have to manage your time, but if that's your priority, you practice. You spend more time doing that thing.
Yeah, I think you spend more time doing it and you have more reps under pressure. So you put yourself into situations that count. You want to practice, whether it's looking in the mirror, going through your presentations, talking to your friend or, you know, your spouse, you got those. But there's also maybe do something at the Rotary Club where you're giving a presentation or some other kind of conference where you're putting yourself out there to continue to communicate. The more reps you have under pressure, the better you're going to perform when the pressure is there. Now, we've talked about your early career, your company culture, what about your podcast? What else would you like to share?
We're organizing an event in October called PDX, the Product Development Expo. It's aligned with my mission of speeding up engineering and helping engineers work better, faster, and smarter. We have dozens of industry experts doing 30 to 60 minute training sessions on a host of different topics, such as design for manufacturing, design for plastic injection molding, project management, glue dispensing, vision inspection, plating and finishing techniques, additive manufacturing, 3D scanning, reverse engineering, right? Relevant for engineers developing physical products. That's the target audience here. I'm passionate and excited for PDX October 21st and 22nd. Go to pdexpo.engineer to learn more about pdexpo.engineer.
Okay. No, that's great, Aaron. And so, Aaron, how can people connect with you to find out more about what you have going on?
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn, Aaron Moncur, M-O-N-C-U-R, probably be a link in the show notes. So find me on LinkedIn. I'm very active. I respond to almost everyone who messages me. If you're just trying to sell me something, I probably will not respond, but otherwise, I will almost certainly get back to you.
Aaron, I just want to thank you for spending some time on the podcast today. I'm going to end this episode like I end every episode, and that's this. Many people know what to do. Fewer know how to do it. There's a select group that actually do it and are living their dreams. Aaron, thank you for being part of that select few.
Thank you so much, James.